Hello and welcome back to Your Politics Show here on Mix 92.6 FM, where each week we speak to one of your local politicians and get the answers to your questions. This week we're speaking to local MP Daisy Cooper, the Liberal Democrat MP for St Albans. Good afternoon, Daisy, and welcome back to the show. We haven't spoken for a while, so there's a lot to catch up on today. But first and foremost, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well, thank you. How are you?
Not too bad at all. It's been strange not speaking to you, Bim or Bambos, for a whole month. And this is why we've got so much to discuss. And of course, we have to open up with analysis of the local election results. Looking at the facts, the Lib Dems gained a majority in 12 councils, held control of all 17 you were defending, gained 407 net councillors in 100 and different councils. The BBC's projection showed that the Liberal Democrats would have won 20% of the national vote, with Labour on 35%, the Conservatives on 26%, and other parties on 19%. How would you rate this performance, Daisy?
Well, we certainly exceeded our own expectations, is what I'll say. You may have seen some of the predictions from the polling guru, John Curtis, and he was saying before the local elections that if the Liberal Democrats just stayed still in terms of the number of councillors that we had, we'd be doing well. That's because the seats that we were fighting this time were seats that we had won in 2019 when we got our best set of elections ever. So we went into these elections at a real kind of high point, and then we massively exceeded our expectations by winning more than 400 councillors. So yeah, we're pretty chuffed as chips, but certainly, you know, we've had a few days to celebrate, and now it's head down and working hard again, because we never take votes for granted.
And you broke, was it the BBC swingometer as well? And you
we put did. Out
a little cheeky oops tweet.
Yeah, I know, that's quite fun. Yeah, so they had for those of you who haven't seen it, yeah, it was a swingometer saying what would be a good night for the Lib Dems. So up to 100 votes, up to 200 votes, up to 300 votes, and up to 400 votes. And that's as high as it went. And obviously we were over 400 votes. So over 400 councillors, sorry, I should say. And therefore we broke the swingometer, which is, you know, quite fun.
Now, the story from many political analysts is that it was a dire day for the Conservatives, a bad performance for Labour, and as you've said there, a strong one for the Lib Dems. Guy's analysis of the election showed that although Labour would gain 95 seats, total of 298, the Conservatives would lose 127, and this would lead to a hung parliament. We'll discuss that in a minute. But this would also lead the Liberal Democrats to get 39 seats. However, some worry that the local election results may not translate into MP seats. Are you confident that you'll see more success in the general election this time?
Well, I hope that we will. If you think about St Albans, obviously we took control of the council in the middle of 2019. And then just a few months later, we won the constituency seat as well. And so there clearly is an example there. And I'm living proof of the fact that we can use wins at local government level as a springboard for winning at the national level. And if you look back over two or three decades, there are many more examples of where the Liberal Democrats have done that as well. You know, we did that in Eastleigh. You know, we did that in Winchester a couple of decades ago. We've done that in other places around the country. And so I hope very much that in many of the places where we've secured gains at this set of local elections, that we stand a really good chance of winning, I hope, at the general election.
Now, the data shows, as I said there, that it's likely to be a Labour hung parliament if the voting was to continue as it was at this local election. There'd be 28 short of an overall majority. Discussions are now coming to fore of a Liberal Democrat coalition. Would you want to work with Sir Keir Starmer?
Do you know what? This is a question I've been asked so many times in the last week in particular, but even before that. And I think it's a really strange question, because it's a question that, you know, journalists want to ask, but it's just not really a question that most of the public are asking. Most of the public are saying, tell me why I should vote for you. The country is so broken. The cost of living emergency is terrible. The NHS seems to be, you know, on its knees. Our environment is in a mess. You know, the climate catastrophe is coming towards us, you know, every single single day. What is your party going to do about it? And our number one priority, in fact, our only priority now, is to work incredibly hard to work out what our pitch is going to be to the British public at the next general election, and then to go out and win as much support and trust and votes as we can in that general election. Thinking beyond the general election, assuming that you have the votes of lots of people, I think is incredibly presumptuous, and that's just not a position we're prepared to entertain. Our entire focus is on winning seats at the next general election by winning over the trust and support and votes of voters in key areas around the country where we can beat Conservative MPs and elect Liberal Democrat MPs instead.
But in order for the Liberal Democrats, obviously, to make an impact, you know, make a change, as you're discussing there, you do have to be involved with the power makers. And the likely scenarios, you know, unless there is a massive swing, which we've never seen in history, the likely scenario for you to be involved would be to work with Keir Starmer. I want to open it out a bit more, though. Maybe some people haven't asked you this question, but with his track record, he seems to flip-flopped on a lot of ideas. He seems to have abandoned a lot of his core principles. And I will ask Bambos this as well for fairness. Do you think that you could trust working with Sir Keir Starmer?
Well, it'll be interesting to see what's in the Labour Party manifesto, because they're obviously still writing their manifesto and we're still writing ours. So I think the key thing will be to see what every single political party is promising at the next general election, and then to look at the track record of each of those political parties. You know, the race in St Albans fundamentally is between the Conservatives and the Liberal Democrats. I think it's very, you know, it's abundantly clear what the Conservatives' track record is. You know, they have broken almost every single promise they made in the 2019 general election and since. They've driven our health services into the ground. They've failed to fix social care like Boris Johnson promised to do on the steps of Downing Street. They haven't managed to, they took up our idea of a windfall tax, but didn't do it properly. And as a result, we've got millions of people around the country struggling to pay their energy bills and to put food on the table. And I hope very much that my party will be able to, you know, put forward a really strong manifesto at the national level. And hopefully people will be able to see in St Albans the difference that, you know, I've made as a hardworking MP. So that's really what the focus will be, I hope, in St Albans. But people make up their own minds once they see that manifestos and the platforms that each party is standing on, but we're still, you know, a long way off from that yet.
Now, the local elections also saw a massive boost for the Green Party. They got 11% of the national vote. Do you see them as a threat? And do you think that all parties need to pay attention to the ideas that they're offering?
I think what voters want to see are politicians and political parties that have a serious plan to tackle the climate and ecological emergency that we're facing. You know, just yesterday, I joined with a group of MPs on a cross-party basis to once again try and put the climate and ecology bill in front of the government. That's been done a number of times. The Conservative government continues to refuse to take it up, despite cross-party backing. And I think really that's what many members of the public want to see. But at the same time, I think you have to be slightly careful about, you know, single issue parties, because quite frankly, politicians, whether it's local government or national government, have to make decisions on all sorts of different issues. We have to take up casework for constituents on a whole range of different things. And I think voters want to know what are the sort of set of values that you're going to, what the values that you hold that will underpin the decisions that you make, whether that's at local or national government. And the Liberal Democrats are very clear about our sort of open internationalist values, our belief in devolving power to local authorities, our kind of pro-public services, pro-business, environmental kind of stance. And so people kind of see, you know, they get what they see when it comes to the Lib Dems.
One final story with the local elections is that 63,000 people were able to meet the deadline for the new voter ID, which is just 3% of the 2 million people who have had their right to vote removed by the government's new rules. What would the Lib Dems do to resolve this situation?
Well, I mean, as I say, we haven't written our manifesto yet, but I hope very much that we'll repeal it. I mean, the fact is that the only allegations of voter fraud that have happened in the country have happened through postal voting. And this time around, postal voting was the only bit of the election that didn't require you to use any ID. So it's completely absurd. And I had a number of examples of people who struggled to vote or actually chose not to vote because they felt on principle as though they shouldn't have to show their ID. And that was from somebody who wasn't even going to vote for the Lib Dems. But, you know, there was, you know, I know of at least one constituent who asked for my help in terms of registering to get a voter ID card because they had no way of being able to do that on their own. There was a person who stopped me on polling day itself in the middle of the street when I was knocking on doors and said, how can I get voter ID today because I haven't got any? And I said, I'm afraid it's too late. There was somebody who, you know, took the wrong ID, and somebody else who had the only ID they had was actually, I think it was the passport office for renewal, so they couldn't take it in. So there's all sorts of problems that have occurred. I thought it was pretty brazen, actually, of one of the Conservative MPs today who stood up in Parliament and very boldly claimed that there hadn't been any problems at all whatsoever in his own area. And that's even before the government have even launched their own review into it, anything's happened or not. So let's have that review. Let's look at the evidence. But what worries me is that even with that review by government, there will have been a lot of people who just chose not to vote at all, and that data won't be captured. So I'm really concerned about the impact of this and what the ongoing impact may be in future elections as well.
Now, we've also seen a big event at the weekend in the coronation of King Charles. How much of the festivities were you able to enjoy, and did you get involved in any events across the city?
Yeah, so I watched the coronation from my sofa. So I enjoyed, I got a pretty good view, thanks to the BBC. I really enjoyed going to the big lunch on Sunday at the London Coney Caledon Centre and talking to all the local residents who came along to that, and then had a chance to pop in to the street party on Fishpool Street as well later on. I had very good intentions of going to Greenwood Park in Chiswell Green, but I'm afraid the combination of the rain and the tiredness from the local elections got the better of me, and I didn't quite make it off the sofa.
Now, did you attempt to make the coronation quiche?
No, I don't do any of the, well, I do very little of the cooking in my household, and I'm not a big fan of quiche, so I'm afraid, no, I didn't. But I was knocking on the doors of lots of people who were desperately making them on Thursday.
Oh, well, there you go. And did you try any kind of coronation-themed foods or drinks or anything over the weekend as well?
Oh, there were lovely little bits of cake and things like that that were, you know, that we tried. But I mean, it had lovely decorations. Yeah, so just mostly cake.
Oh, love that. Lovely. That it was a great opportunity to just eat lots of cake, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. Were you impressed as well with the turnout of the big help out? Because that was one of maybe the positive legacies of the coronation as well. Hopefully we'll see something like that in years to come. The COVID lockdowns and things like that stop people volunteering, and maybe this will kickstart it. What kind of information have you got about the positive impact for St. Albans?
Well, I mean, obviously there's no kind of official report or anything like that, but I've seen some fantastic photographs all over social media of people getting involved, whether it's in litter picking or looking after the River Ver and other sort of projects, you know, planting trees. So I'm all in favour of any kind of event, royal or otherwise, that gets people involved in our civic society. You know, basically it's what makes our communities work, right? So people sort of get off the sofa and get stuck in. And I think it was really wonderful to see people either getting involved in groups or, you know, doing activities with groups that they're already involved with, or perhaps getting involved for the first time. And I saw, you know, the scouts doing all sorts of activities as well. So really fantastic to see, and I hope people keep it up.
Now, focusing maybe on some of the negativity around the coronation, there's been questions asked of local councils spending money during a cost of living crisis on the event. People have questioned whether money was spent on events rather than helping people across the money country meet their needs. Open Democracy asked local councils on coronation spending. However, St. Albans City Council refused to respond. Daisy, do you know the answer to how much was spent, or could you find this out for us?
I mean, I haven't seen that story at all, so I have no idea whether it's that they've refused to respond or whether they just haven't had the opportunity to respond yet. So I honestly don't know. But I mean, of course I can find out. And, you know, obviously the council has to be transparent about all of its funding because it's taxpayers' money. So I'm sure that in the fullness of time, those details will be available. But if anybody wants me to make inquiries, of course, just drop me an email and I'll ask how much it was. What I would say, though, is whether you are a royalist or a republican, I do think that some of the support across the country this weekend would have gone into getting people into the town centres to support our hard-pressed hospitality and retail businesses. And you know, whether it's, you know, whether it's the market or whether it's street parties or whether it's food and drink festivals, whatever it might be, occasions like this can be a really good opportunity to get people into our town centres and to support our small businesses. So I think, you know, however much money any council has spent, I think it's very important to make the distinction between money that may have been spent on a vanity project versus money that might have been spent on, you know, helping our local economy.
Okay. And the final question from me before we head into the community questions, what commitments have been made by Thameslink after recent ratings show it's the worst London commuter station?
Yeah, so there haven't really been commitments as such, but there has been I had a meeting with Thameslink about all the issues that I raised in the letter I wrote to them about, and it's quite a complex picture. So I raised the issue that there's, you know, as you say, St Albans City Centre had the city station had been rated the worst London commuter station on the basis of delays, cancellations and cost. Now, in terms of cost and the price of tickets, that falls to the government. The government is doing a pricing review. They've been doing it for a very long time. We're still waiting to see the results of that. I continue to press the government on it. It is sort of the number one issue that MPs tend to raise with rail companies. And the rail companies always say, go and talk to the government about it. So that's the issue on fares and pricing. In terms of sort of cancellations and delays, I have to say Thameslink were quite transparent with me about some of the challenges they faced. In the last couple of years, they've had a lot of had a very slow process of getting their drivers back into driving when they've had to go through some kind of retraining. They've done a lot of internal reorganization to try and speed that process up. I put a very detailed update in the Facebook groups for St Albans commuters and passengers, where I've set out all of the information there. What I am trying to find out is how many of the cancellations and delays were down to down to causes related to Network Rail and the track, and how many of them were down to Thameslink themselves, which is about the trains and the drivers. And it's often quite difficult to make that separation, but they have sent me a whole load of data, and it's going to take probably, you know, a very large mug of tea and a few hours to chew through that data to work out really what's going on and to see where the blame lies, quite frankly.
Yes. So let's move to the community questions. Brian started it out with an email. It's not really a question, but maybe you can address some of his concerns here. He said, I feel our area is going into big decline. I went to Verulamium Park and was shocked at how poor everything is. Public toilets permanently closed, golf course closed permanently, car park half empty as nobody can afford to pay, tennis courts were totally empty, and the cafe was the emptiest I have ever seen. I wanted a fun day out with the family, but have been feeling sad about how things are falling apart. What can you say on this, Daisy?
Do you know what? I'm afraid this is the cost of living crisis biting. You know, I mean, we know that people are really, really struggling. People are having to make sure that the pennies last longer than they normally do. A lot of people just aren't in a position to go out and spend money, you know, whether that's in a local cafe or in a shop or a pub or a bar or something like that. At the same time, we obviously had the Conservative government's mini budget last autumn, which blew a massive hole in the nation's finances. And that has had a knock-on impact on local councils' budgets and the services that they're able to provide. In St Albans, I am pleased that our local council has managed to continue to provide services despite, you know, the various cuts and the Conservative government incompetence. They very, very reluctantly had to put up, you know, some costs, for example. But, you know, ultimately there are other places around the country where swimming pools have had to close down, where, you know, where they can't be heated at all anymore, where bins are only collected every 3 weeks. But we have at least managed to keep those kind of services going and to protect all of the statutory services. So the fact is that the national picture does impact on local finances. And, you know, the government, you know, whilst we would all like to see, for example, public toilets remain open, the fact of the matter is the government doesn't provide any funding to local authorities to maintain those facilities and everything like that. And it brings with it a cost. And so if people do have particularly concerns or if they have suggestions on, you know, you know, different proposals to where civic societies or groups can get involved in supporting services, please by all means contact your district council, district councillors, and make those suggestions to them.
Tricia has moved on to the Sudan crisis. She said, why is nobody pushing for a Sudanese refugee scheme? Why aren't you, Daisy?
Well, actually, a number of MPs have been doing this, and we've been calling for a safe and legal route for refugees from Sudan. Obviously, the government has focused in the first instance on getting our own nationals out of that country. And as many people know, it was not a smooth process. And there were challenges, particularly with people who were resident in the UK, although not citizens. They were resident here and working in the NHS. And I'm glad that after quite a lot of pressure, the government changed their minds on that and said that residents could be airlifted home as well. The UK government has a really important role in terms of making sure that the country doesn't fall into a complete and utter humanitarian catastrophe. There's a quad of four countries that are effectively entrusted with making sure that the security and safety of people in Sudan continues. The UK and the US are two of those countries. And personally, on a personal level, I found it quite shocking that we haven't really even found out whether or not Rishi Sunak and President Biden have even had a conversation about this. But there are many of us who are saying that, yes, there needs to be a safe and legal route for people from Sudan. And when the government's been pressed on this issue, they have, you know, the Home Secretary in particular, Suella Braverman, has basically effectively ruled it out. And I think that is incredibly worrying and shows once again that under the Conservative government, sadly, they are leading the country away from our international obligations and our status, you know, on the international stage.
Moving it to a local concern, Callum says, what was the cause of the sinkhole in Elm Street? And is there any chance of others in the area?
The honest answer I've got is that I've got absolutely no idea. The highways are a county council issue. The one on Elm Drive, I saw it reported in the newspaper, I think like many other residents, and that is in the county division where the county councillor is Anthony Rowlands. So I don't know what caused it. I've seen in the newspaper that apparently it will take a couple of weeks to fix. But if anybody wants an update, they'd need to write to Councillor Anthony Rowlands.
Sarah said, Daisy, will you try and get TfL to reverse their decision over travel cards? It will make my journey far more expensive that I'll now have to pay at least twice if I go into the city. How can this be justified during a cost of living crisis?
Yeah, it's a great question. For those who are not familiar with this, Transport for London has published a consultation, and they say they're consulting, but it does look like they are going to withdraw these day travel cards. And that's really unfortunate for a lot of people in St Albans, because it means that at the moment you can use your sort of rail card discount, whether it's a young person's rail card or over 60s or a disabled person's rail card. And if this particular day travel card is withdrawn, people won't be able to use those and get that discount. So I have written to Thameslink, and I made it really clear to Thameslink that even if Transport for London withdraws these cards, there is no obligation on Thameslink for them to withdraw it as well. So I have written to them and asked them to make that clear and to confirm to me that it will continue the use of them. I haven't yet had a response, so I don't know what Thameslink's position is going to be. But certainly, if anybody else shares those concerns, by all means, please write to me. It's really helpful for me to know how many people could be potentially affected by this change.
Yes, and people can contact you. We'll put that in the description. Peter has said, is there any positive from Hearts County Council over the potholes issue?
Yeah, do you know what? I have spoken to hundreds, if not thousands of residents over the first half of this year. And it's the number one issue that tends to come up, also alongside the NHS and the cost of living and everything else. But you know, potholes, they make such a, you know, they're so disruptive to people's lives, aren't they? You know, people have told me about how, you know, their tyre has blown and it's cost them money to buy a new tyre. I know two people who have come off a bike from potholes. One broke a rib, the other one broke their collarbone. Two separate incidences. And there's scores of parents who tell me that they stop walking their children on the pavements because there are too many cars, you know, swerving to miss the potholes, and they just worry that a car's going to swerve and maybe hit the pavement. So it's having a huge impact on people's lives. I have written to Hertfordshire County Council about this. And I've asked them a series of questions, not just about when are they going to get these things fixed, but also which contractors they're using and why is it that potholes that are filled in often fall apart just a few weeks later. I haven't had a full response from them yet, but they have agreed to have a meeting with me next Tuesday. So if you ask me again next month, hopefully I'll have some answers for you.
Oh, well, there you go. And you will be on again next month. So a little bit of a cheeky plug there. Joanna has rounded off our questions for this month, though. And she said, it was lovely seeing you at St. George's Day Parade. Would the Lib Dems finally make it a national holiday?
Yeah, great question. I don't think we've got a party policy on this at all. But my personal view is that I would quite like to see it as a national holiday because we don't have anything like the number of national holidays that many other countries have. I think they can be a really fantastic way to bring communities together and also to support our small businesses as well. So I'm all in favour. I can't speak on behalf of the party on this one, but on a personal level, I'm all in favour. Although I am now expecting to get petitioned by everybody who wants Auburn Day to be a national holiday as well.
I mean, it's a shame it can't be like a live on air, you know, breaking news that you've confirmed it's it will be part of the Lib Dem manifesto, but at least you're on board with it. And it would be quite fun to have, you know, maybe St. George's Day parades across the country on a national holiday. But for now, as you said, Daisy, you will be back again next month. It's always great to speak to you and get answers to people's questions. We wish you the best of health and a great month ahead.
Thank you very much, and to you.